from Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. I recently heard someone in an interview on another show quoting a parent. This person said, "I feel like my son is addicted to cocaine that I gave him." This parent was not talking about cocaine. Rather, that's the best metaphor she could think of for her son's relationship with his smartphone. For years, people have been raising the alarm about this issue. People like the social psychologist Jonathan Haidt, who last year published a book called The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. His central claim in the book is that two trends, quote, overprotection in the real world and underprotection in the virtual world, are the major reasons why children born after 1995 became the anxious generation, end quote. So what are parents and grandparents and teachers and the rest of us supposed to do to help our children make better choices when it comes to these devices? Especially when many of us make such poor decisions about our smartphones, getting sucked into an hour of TikTok videos or doom-scrolling social media, so we're sure that we're up to the minute on all the terrible things happening in the world and the snarkiest jokes about those terrible things. Someone who's been thinking a lot about this is Alan Barton. He's an associate professor in human development and family studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. More to the point for our conversation, he's also a specialist with the University of Illinois Extension, the part of U of I that works to translate research advancements into practical use for everyday Illinoisans like you and me. A few weeks ago, Extension made available a Smart Families Kit, free to anyone who asked, plus $5 shipping and handling. The kit includes guides for families, an alarm clock and timer, an agreement for screen use, and more. We'll get into that a little later. But more broadly speaking, with Christmas coming up, Hanukkah already here, I thought this might be a time when a lot of families are thinking through the difficult choice about how to respond when our kids ask for a phone. For those of us who are worried about these things, saying yes can feel like giving in. Or maybe you're someone who thinks these concerns are overblown. Either way, we'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Did you give your child a phone? Do you regret it or not? What rules has your family set around screens? Give us a call. Again, 800-222-9455. I should say, I ordered one of these Smart Families kits. I have it here with me. We're going to dig into what's inside a little later, including a deck of 52 cards with alternatives to screen time. But first, Alan Barton, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about the scope of the problem with smartphones and family life. How do you define it?
Wow, that's a big question. So it's a big question that every family is trying to navigate right now. Screens are not going away, but we're also seeing that they're having an effect and maybe almost an intrusion in family life in ways that we don't always want. And so trying to figure out the parameters or guidelines for how to use technology in ways that are helpful and bring people closer together rather than bring them apart is a question that every family that I've interacted with and seen is wrestling with. And what also makes it harder is that it's new, and so there's really no like much prior experience that we can go back to say, well, like, this is what we did growing up. It's interesting when I teach classes on adolescent development, ask my students, what age should do you want to give a child a smartphone? The general default answer all my students give is the same age that they got theirs originally. And so as families, as parents, as grandparents, we didn't have this our own childhood, and so we're trying to kind of look around us and make sense of everything that's happening so quickly and how to respond as best we can as a family.
Yeah, this is why I tell my kids you can get your first dumb phone at age 23 like I did. smartphone much, much older. Is this just a problem of, you know, parents and these kids today, or do kids see problems with the adults in their lives and their smartphone usage as well? Does it go up the chain?
Yeah, it goes both ways. Some research asked adolescents, what's one thing you wish was different in your family? And the number one response is that I wish my parents spent less time on their phones. So it's an issue that I think is an equal opportunity offender. I think when you think of the developing brain in adolescents, they're particularly susceptible. I think that's why Jonathan Haidt's book, I sometimes view adolescents as the canary in the coal mine in the sense of, given their brain development, the effects of social media and technology and change were first to see among them, but it's certainly not immune to older people as adults as well.
So let's get into that then, because what does the research say about screen time and child development?
So there's a few ways to answer that. So I think it's important to differentiate screen time versus smartphones and social media. So the type of technology is certainly going to make a difference, as is the child's age. So I think there's a growing amount of evidence, particularly when it comes to adolescent age, that smartphones and social media, there's a tremendous, tremendous amount of risk in introducing kids to that, in terms of their developing brain, in terms of how dopamine works and how all of the brain works with social media things becomes, I think, a good argument to say it's addictive, and so there's increasing research to suggest that as well. So there's ways that technology also in screens can be used in ways that are helpful and can promote development. On the aggregate, though, I don't think most times screens are used in those ways that help create and instruct. They're the distraction, and it's almost magical as a parent. So I'm a dad. I've got 5 kids from 13 down to 1. And when you press play or turn on the screen, you can have a house that there's loud arguing, and then it's obviously becomes eerily silent, and everybody is engaged on what's on the screen or the glowing rectangle. And so, again, it's how devices are used becomes really important, but it's recognition that these devices have an inherent draw that's really hard to pull away from.
How do you think about screen time limits for kids?
So how do I think about screen time limits with children? So I'll say with this, I think the more you can, when it comes to smartphones and social media, the longer you can delay, the better. I don't even go past the ages what most people are going to, even those that stay starting around early high school, middle high school. I think it's really important for parents to realize that the analogy I sometimes use is to say, I understand when you stay in touch with your child, but that doesn't necessarily mean giving them a smartphone, right? So if your child comes home from school in fifth grade and says, I need a calculator for my math class now, and you handed them an iPad, they would say, it would be kind of get a quizzical look, because it has a calculator on it. It also has 1,000 other things that it introduces to the child's life. Same thing with smartphones. So you can connect with the child in ways that have a phone and text messages that doesn't also bring the rest of the entire information age along with it. So I don't try to follow, when it comes to children and screens, it's hard to have precise rules and limits, because sometimes those things move, and it's a bigger question of what are we trying to form in children, okay? Yuri Bronfenbrenner was arguably one of the biggest rock star researchers in human development. So our main theories are all based on his work. And he was writing around the time of television, so 1980s or so, massively different than some of the personalized screen use, personalization from iPads, tablets, phones that we have now. But he made a really interesting observation, and a quote that I think is really important to keep in mind, is that when he was talking about television and children's development, he said he thought the importance there is not so much in the behavior that it prevents, or sorry, not so much in the behavior it produces, but more in the behavior it prevents, how it prevents, you say, the talks, the games, the family festivities, even the arguments through which much of child's learning takes place and character is formed. Jonathan Haidt makes the same analogy, right? That children learn real world, real interactions, and that moving that into a synchronous, kind of personalized, asynchronous environment where you're interacting with screens doesn't, on average, probably none of us would say what we want for a child's development. Now, does it say a blanket list to remove entirely? No, but certainly families have done that. And the first week, I imagine, is really, really hard. But I rarely see parents wishing that they introduced screens earlier to their kids.
All right, let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're talking about particularly smartphones and smart families. That's actually the name of a program from the University of Illinois Extension that aims to educate families about ways they can deal with some of the challenges presented by the proliferation of phones in our society, especially as they affect young people. We asked members of our texting group about this, and you can join that by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. What they think about phones and young people in their lives. Christopher in Brimfield says, my wife was a first grade teacher. It shocked me when she said that so many first graders had a cell phone. Sarah in Rockford said, it's a very real concern and issue. I notice a huge difference with my six-year-old when she's had a lot of digital time versus not. Yes, she will get her own phone, but not until she's 16. If we as adults struggle to limit phone time and have healthy social media relationships, I can't imagine the damage it has with underdeveloped and growing brains. And then Jay in Elburn, who says, my oldest daughter was an avid reader before her phone. The issue is always getting her to put her books down. She read the entire Harry Potter series in a six-week period when she was in fifth grade. Now, she's a junior in high school, and I'm not sure if she's completed one book in the years since getting a phone and social media. What do you think about all this? 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Alan, I've heard you refer to yourself, or maybe I read you refer to yourself as a prevention scientist. So talk about what inspired you to make these kits, these smartphones, smart families kits.
So one of my goals is to help develop strong families in our communities, in our state, in our country. And so I try to stay abreast on what are the main challenges families are facing nowadays. And I think it's unarguable that figuring out how to keep technology in its proper place is one of the number one challenges every family is facing. And its effect on children and adults is increasingly clear. I mean, there was Hunt Alcott, she's out of Stanford, and has a great paper about digital addiction and basically showing how, even in adults, how habit-forming technology devices are in adults and in children. And it's something that when they deactivate their accounts, they report improvements on every indicator of well-being. And so it's a clear thing that families are all wrestling with not clear answers. And so this project was one small foray into an attempt to say, let's start a conversation about how we're going to be purposeful in our technology use.
That's great. I myself used to be very active on social media, especially when I was a daily news reporter. I have really dialed that back to where I only go now if there's some specific thing I'm looking for. I don't scroll anymore. And I got to say, I feel like I'm a lot more relaxed than some of my friends and colleagues who spend more time on social media. I don't know, maybe it's burying my head in the sand. I mean, I'm still keeping up with the news, though, just not in that particular way. All right, one of the core pieces of this kit is the Family Screens Agreement. What's that about?
So the Family Screens Agreement is recognizing that how do we use technology and screens devices in ways that bring us together rather than pull us apart. And so, again, we have devices in our homes, but thinking through what do we value and then putting some basic parameters and limits on when they're going to be used, importantly, when they're not going to be used, and how they're going to be used. So, again, having some conversations about, okay, here's our family, what we value, and how technology fits into that life. Because at the end of the day, as you said, we want strong families. We want our kids to develop well. And so we're in this. And now we just need to have some conversations about how these things work. Technology and these devices, particularly social media things, they're designed to pull us in and keep us in. Their business model is you're the product being sold. The more time you spend on there and the more you click on their ads and see their ads, the more money they make. So they're not neutral. The algorithms work very specific ways to try to pull your attention in.
That's the key, right? We are in the attention economy.
Exactly.
And we are all the product.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it takes intentionality to try to say, okay, what do we desire for our family relationships to look like? And so how do we develop some practical ways to actually have the family environment and home that we want to have in ways that, yes, technology's there, but that doesn't make us lose out on something we want more.
I'm going to read a couple of the examples here because there's practices and principles for phone, tablets, TVs, other screens. And it says, some ideas. Parents and caregivers have access to children's devices and accounts, and spouses have access to each other's devices and accounts. Children must receive parental permission before installing any app or making any changes to a device. A family member can politely request that another family member put a device away at times when it is interfering with family priorities. And recognition that having a device is a luxury, not a right. Has anyone ever asked you to put your, please put your phone away? Please, did they ask nicely?
Oh, for me, maybe just because I'm in this world and I'm off. I'm sure it's happened before. Oh, yeah, I know it has. Because, again, the pull is so there. Like, these, when you get the notifications or a message or a text, it's very easy to get distracted. All of us can. The adults were just as susceptible to this. And so we all have to be intentional about how we develop healthy practices. What we pissed on there are some on that list are some examples. But it's a great conversation for families to have to say we're in this together, right? So family, even for parents to know with kids, our intent is not to try to decrease your happiness. Our joy is to try to increase your happiness and increase your development. And that's why we're choosing to make these certain choices about how we use phones, when or even if we introduce phones and other devices in our home.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. That's good. It's like the reason we don't let you go swimming, you know, in the lake without a life preserver or anything like that is the same reason we're not letting you use a smartphone without any limits. All right. You can join us, 800-222-9455. We're going to continue talking about phones and families with Alan Barton from U of I. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today with Alan Barton, who's an associate professor in human development and family studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also a specialist with U of I Extension. And we are talking about phones and families, specifically smartphones, and trying to make families smarter about their smartphones. We've been talking in part about a kit that the Extension has put together. There's a digital version. You can go online. We'll have a link to that at our website where you can learn about some of the things we're talking about. There's also a physical version that they offer from time to time. I think the next round is going to be available sometime early next year, but it includes things like an alarm clock so you don't have to sleep with your phone on your bedside table as your alarm clock. It includes a timer. It includes a deck of cards where you can pick some activities to do as a family that don't involve digital devices. We also want to hear from you today, 800-222-9455. Did you give your child a phone? Do you regret it or not? What rules has your family set around screens? And if you grew up with a smartphone, is there something you wish your parents had maybe done differently? 800-222-9455 is the number. And let's start with a call. Janice is calling from Rockford. Janice, thanks for calling in.
Hello. Good to be in.
Yeah. So I understand you have experience with this in a couple of different ways. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm actually a high school teacher, and my daughter attends the school where I teach. She was given a cell phone in fifth grade because she was doing extracurricular activities where she stayed after school. But it was merely text. It was a flip phone. When she got to high school, she got a smartphone, but she's never been allowed social media. She will be 18 in April, never had social media, isn't allowed group chats without me on the chat. I check her phone regularly, and the rule is if you don't give me your phone, then it's gone. She's grown up without a television, so she knows that I won't hesitate to take the technology away. But as a teacher, I have had parents tell me, I don't want to deal with the fight taking the phone away. Can you take it away at school?
Interesting. Well, it's interesting. Okay, it sounds like you grew up in a household without a tele, or your child grew up in a household without a television. That is definitely one of the more hardcore ends of what we've been talking about. Was there ever any friction over the lack of social media use? But everybody else
never.
Is doing it. This is where everybody talks. No.
Yeah, absolutely never. She sees the drama that ensues with her peers over social media context, and she actually recently thanked me for not allowing her to jump into that realm without fully understanding the consequences. She lives a very peaceful, drama-free life. Her and her friends also don't have social media, and they are able to solve disagreements face-to-face verbally. It's never a question of who said what.
Wow, fascinating. Well, Janice, good on you. Thanks for calling in and sharing your experience. I appreciate it. Alan, do you want to respond to anything she said there?
So I think her daughter's story is not dissimilar from others that grow up with a phone-free childhood. I think, so Claire Morell wrote a book called The Tech Exit, I think. And one thing she highlights is having some other families that adopt the same practices as you. That way it doesn't feel like your child's the only one, quote, missing out. But I would, it's good to also flip the script and say, I think, honestly, the youth that miss out more are the ones that get a phone earlier. Not on, and everything in here is on average. So we all have kids that will know, our own kids that have got a smartphone earlier and been well-adjusted. Certainly, the research suggests on average that they certainly come with a massive risk for their mental health and well-being. But like having a community that you're a part of that doesn't require that can be a breath of fresh air.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the pushback on this. And we got a text message from Abby in Urbana who says, I'm a middle school teacher, Unit 4 schools. I have an unpopular opinion among my peers, and that's okay. She says, phones are part of our world now, whether or not we like it. GOAT educators, greatest of all time educators like GLB, Gloria Ladson Billings, say to adapt. So in my space, I address the district and school rules, but I try to use my teaching space to teach about phone usage. A school is a place of learning. We need to learn how to adapt to our changing world. We adapted when calculators were created. We created computer labs when desktop computers became a reality in the 80s. When iPads and Chromebooks rolled out in the 2010s, schools adapted by weaving it into digital and core curriculum. The digital world's not going away. She said, I worked in a photo lab when we went from film to digital. The world will evolve. We need to evolve with it. What do you think about that, Alan?
So I'm sensitive to those remarks. I think social media and smartphones have been a qualitatively different shift, and I'll throw AI in there too. A qualitatively different shift than many other technologies we had, particularly when it comes to their addictive nature. And interesting thing, so, I mean, listeners of this home can remember broadband internet and dialing up and hearing the noise and all of that. So people initially thought that the millennials would be the ones that are really going to struggle when we had laptops and sort of internet. That's not the case. The research is clearly suggesting it's the following generation in terms of where the mental health things really thoroughly spiked, the hockey stick of like it's low, maybe increasing, and then it just jumps up. So I mean based on the research that I see, the advent of smartphones, front-facing cameras, likes on social media are introduced challenges to human development in ways that were not the most helpful. And I think the research also about the addictive nature of these things. So I previously mentioned Hunt Alcott's he's got a brilliant article he did a couple years ago that just shows how habit forming social media is and the self-control problems that come with it. And so I think given that, again, we're not anti-technology, but I think particularly when it comes to smartphones and social media, that how they work with dopamine, downregulating the brain's dopamine system to want to need more. There's another book, someone from Stanford called Dopamine Nation, like that. They're a qualitatively different type of technology. And I think initially people were excited about it because, again, they're just another form of technology. But the effects we're seeing on youth development, I think they're a different animal, if you will.
Yeah, I guess. And this is why it's different in your view from, you know, we've had these scares. Some people will say, look, people freaked out about radio. People freaked out about comic books. They freaked out about television and then video games. And that's why you're saying the sort of addictive, you know, the dopamine response, the algorithms is what makes this different.
Correct. And even the data plays itself out, too. I mean, it's a more global phenomenon that this is affecting mental health everywhere. And so, and even attention fragmentation, the ability to write and think like that, how these things work. I mean, even with television, it was still some of a social environment, right? But how smartphones, social media work is a qualitatively different thing. Again, there's a massive difference between a calculator and an iPad, and there's a massive difference between a flip phone. And you had the text. You had to press the 7 button with a flip phone, press the 7 button 3 or 4 times just to get to the letter S, right? And so how things work now with smartphones, how quickly interactions happen in an asynchronous way, and the difference between being known versus knowing about people and that distance way of just watching videos of these quick hits that give a quick hit of dopamine and how then it dysregulates the brain is different. Now, certainly it takes education, how we navigate it well, but as I look at the research and findings on youth as a whole in society, I think it's a collective action problem that needs to get addressed.
T9 texting. I was pretty good at that back in the day. So I know what you mean. One more piece of pushback here. Some researchers have said, Haidt, Jonathan Haidt in particular, he does draw a lot of heat. But the idea that linking anxiety and depression to smartphones is correlation, not causation, right? Maybe climate change and the Great Recession and the lasting effects that some of these significant problems we're facing in the world have also been to blame here. What do you make of that critique?
So I've seen that critique as well. As I look at the data, I think his data is more persuasive, what he pulls out. I think that what he wrote, you've mentioned the Anxious Generation book. I think he does a really nice job of laying out what the empirical research is. And as he said, he tried to stay pretty close to what's in the data. And there's a lot of things, humans are very complex, right? So we try to study human behavior. There's a lot of things going on. But this is, if you think of human development as a puzzle, and even the mental health issues that we've seen in youth as a puzzle, there's various pieces that are undoubtedly contributing to that. But I think it would be naive to say that one really, really big piece to that puzzle isn't the advent of smartphones and social media.
All right, I'm going to end by reading there's a fridge magnet in the kit. I like this. Five priorities of smart families. It says, as a family, we prioritize being together over being alone, engaging with the real world over getting lost in the online world, creating memories over consuming media, having device-free times and spaces over constant digital connection, and finally, living with purpose and intention over scrolling, searching, and distraction. Alan, anything you want to add to that?
Nothing else. I mean, there's a lot of principles at play that families have to choose, but I think that families don't need to buy into the line of everybody else is doing it or it's too late. Okay, that you can delay and put off smartphone use, and I don't think your child will be missing. And I think this one reader, listener, caller said as well, missing out on much, if anything. And there's a lot to be gained, and that to be very thoughtful that if they do introduce technology, to have it be a tool, not a slot machine. And so there's different devices out there that if you want to be able to connect with your child, find devices that do that, that also don't trigger a dopamine response that then are going to pull them away from the life of in the real world.
Alan Barton with the University of Illinois Extension, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.